You are now listening to A Tale from a World Asunder.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Simon, I'll be your GM, and joining me as always are the exquisite Nick.
Hello.
And the lovely Louisa.
Hi.
In our last episode, our heroes, born aboard Freedom's Wings, tended to the wounded Lieutenant Second Class Omar, who was restored to consciousness, if not health, and they began to interrogate the mysteries behind his wounds and the situation that landed him in that forest. We soar through a clear sky, and yet, Adelaide, as we approach what you know to be your destination, that clarity begins to fade as you see a sky choked with small but dense acrid clouds that let you know that you're nearly there. Turning a corner in the great mountain range that you've been hugging for the past couple days of travel, you see a cleft in the mountain, one of three that you know to be your shot at safe haven. And as you fly over it, you see that these three valleys, if you're to call them that, these canyons, could not be mistaken for being naturally occurring. They look as though some great beast had dragged a series of three claws in straight lines through the landscape that you know are the remnants of a mining operation. Meridians first came to this land some decades prior, seeking silver. But you know this place only after its abandonment by the forces of civilization. And like so many places across the face of this country, in those areas which have been abandoned, people like you have come to fill the cracks. As you fly in closer, the clouds get denser, a familiar stinging starts. It first affects your eyes and then your nose. Nothing extreme, but a little bit of an acrid, acidic quality to the air here. Almost as though some of the water had been replaced with vinegar. And this kind of acrid humidity sweeps over the deck of your ship as you enter what is effectively a fog that hangs over this area. The DC is not high, but I want you to give me a check just to land safely in this fog.
That's a natural one.
Adelaide is a capable enough captain that you manage to land without damaging the ship. On that natural one, what I will say is Adelaide is not prepared for the response that greets him on the ground. As you land Freedom's Wings somewhat rockily on the side of one of the canyons, a place you've landed many times before, I think you're pretty immediately greeted with shouting and signals being shouted as you start to see from the fog cloaked figures armed to the teeth emerging. This is not a welcome of any kind that you've received before.
Adelaide will run downstairs, quickly relaying to his crew to just operate as normal. They've done this before. They've been in rocky situations before. Tie down, but be ready to tie back up if need be.
You got it, boss.
Thanks. He will go to the bottommost deck of the ship where Omar and Mila are resting and say, we are about to have company. I would say get in one of those back rooms right there. You may be a little bit more protected. Just be on your guard. It should be fine. Just stay there and stay quiet until... Omar, you get back there. Mila, I think I might need your help. You're much better of a talker than me. Come on.
Mila gets up and casts an unseen servant to help Omar into the back room as she leaves.
Does that mean Pinky is coming with you?
No. She's also going to leave Pinky with Omar. Just ping me if you need me.
Adelaide will rush out onto his deck, shotgun in hand, but holding it by the barrel so that it's very clear that he is not ready to shoot.
Uh-huh.
He will raise his other hand as well in a conciliatory gesture. Excuse me, is there someone I can talk to de-escalate this?
There are about five figures that have come out of the fog, all with their heads and basically anything that could be identifying or exposed to the fog covered in cloth.
Adelaide will have tied a bandana around his nose and mouth, knowing the caustic nature of this area, and will have handed Mila a spare to do the same with, just to keep the smoke out of their lungs as much as possible.
You see that one of the figures, who's clearly half height, so either a halfling or a gnome or a kobold, but you can't tell under all the cloth, comes up to you, sort of approaching you, because they are now on the deck of Freedom's Wings. You see that the kobolds have stopped their work just because there are now presences with weapons aboard the ship. This half-height figure in a sort of mottled blue and gray cloak comes forward and goes, "State your business."
"My name is Captain Adelaide Vahammer. I have been here before. I am here to see a very old friend. I have business here."
"We're not expecting you."
"I was not expecting to come here on such short notice."
"We were in a bit of a touchy situation."
"Who's your friend?"
"This is Mila Benteza."
"I meant, who's your friend with us?"
"Pascal Karas."
The half-height figure looks to the others, who all kind of nod. One you see goes back into what you know to be the like proper part of the settlement. "You won't mind if we check, will you?"
"Absolutely not. He's not expecting me, but I am very good friends with him."
The figure takes off a set of goggles that it is wearing so that you can see their eyes. "Listen, if you've been here before, apologies for the inconvenience, but wartime measures."
Adelaide very slightly cocks an eyebrow, not moving another muscle. "Wartime measures? What war are you fighting over here that the rest of the world isn't?"
"If Paz is your friend, he can explain."
"All right. Thank you for not shooting us immediately."
"We're not that far gone." And you see figures begin to, like, settle down. There are still rifles aboard your ship. They are not pointed at you or anyone else.
Adelaide will gesture to the kobolds and say to the people on the deck of a ship, "Do you mind if we continue our docking procedures? We can pick up if we need to and go, if that is what is required, but assuming my story is correct, I'd like to get a head start on this."
Give me a persuasion roll.
13.
The figure nods and says to the assembled figures, "You speak halfling, right?"
"I do."
The figure says in halfling, "Let them do what they need to do." It takes maybe about 20 minutes before one of the cloaked figures returns.
"We've told him to expect you.
He's currently busy with the chief at the moment, but he knows you're here.
I'm sorry, the chief?
The halfling turns to you again and says, wartime measures.
Right. Now, if that's all clear and sorted, would you mind getting off my ship, please?
You see they begin to file off.
Adelaide won't lower the gangplank for them. He'll just let them do whatever the fuck they're gonna do. Once they're all gone, Adelaide will turn to Mila and go, okay, this is new. This is the kind of place where people tend to turn a blind eye to most things. I'm not used to such an unwelcoming party, if you catch my drift.
I mean, what's a little vigilance for two people wanted by the Meridian Army?
Precisely. Let's just inform Omar of what's going on and leave him where he is. I'll leave the kobolds here as well, just to make sure that nobody goes at the cabin.
Mila just pings off Pinky, like conveys that telepathically to Pinky, and gets ready to go.
You see that the kobolds have also started their work of oiling up all of the metal on the ship so that it doesn't corrode in this kind of caustic environment. They've done this before. They know what's up. You are led in deeper into the gorge by these figures. And Adelaide, you know to expect this, but Mila, as you descend under the ground level, you see that the fog completely dissipates. It either doesn't float in here, but you also see that there are sigils inscribed into the top of the canyon that are clearly keeping it out. There are like magical devices here keeping the fog out. As you are led deeper and deeper down a set of steps and pathways that are cut into the rock face, you begin to see numbers of small holes that look like naturally occurring clefts that look like they could be sort of accidents or unintentional openings. But as the figures begin to approach one, you see that this is illusory. They are in fact doorways made to look as though they have been covered over with rock falls or made to look like natural crevices. As you pass through the illusion, you are immediately greeted by a warmth and a cleanliness. The air in here is warm and just a little bit humid, and it smells very mineral. You see that the walls of this place are sheer rock that has been whitewashed over and then painted on. You're led through the entry room where you are asked to relinquish, firstly, all of your weapons, which Adelaide, you know, is part of standard procedure here. You also have to remove any outer layer that might still be covered in fog or gas or dust from above, as well as your shoes.
Does Mila's staff get counted in that?
They know a mage when they see one. You can hear, walking through the passages of this place, the echoes of population. Rowdy arguments in some places, of commerce happening in others, of friendly chatter from others. Because these are caverns, they echo, which also reminds you that everything you say might be heard elsewhere. Adelaide, I will say, returning to this place, you're not as struck by the warmth and cleanliness and life that's happening here. Something else surprises you. It's quiet, much more quiet than it usually is. and you see a lot more figures as you pass that walk about here armed.
Adelaide just wants to take a note of if there are any familiar faces.
There are plenty. You see people that you've done business with. You see people you've shared meals with or drinks with. Mila, you see that Adelaide actually gets a number of like little greetings.
How's it going? Yeah.
As you pass, ranging from just the kind of casual nice up nod to invitations to a drink at some point.
Been a while.
But most are just glad to see you.
Adelaide responds in kind. Mila, you notice each time he does this, his demeanor shifts.
Hello.
Morning.
With every greeting and invitation, you see him sink into comfort and familiarity, but you also notice a distinct edge. He feels comfortable, but he does not feel safe.
Either of you, feel free to give me an insight check.
I would love to.
Mila's outside eye gets her a dirty 20.
Natural one.
Oh my god, dude.
Get the bad ones out now.
That's not ominous.
Yeah, at all.
I think Adelaide, you relax a little too deeply into that comfort to notice what else is going on here. Mila, as you walk through this space, you start to get the sense that it is much larger than what it is currently being used for. As you walk through rooms that are clearly intended for commerce, through these tunnels and passages, you're not sure how full they once were, but shelves definitely look empty.
Does any of it show something closer to like signs of abandonment, or is it all like clean and meticulous still?
Everything is clean, everything is meticulous, but on that unnatural 20, as you look into some of the faces here, you see both the excitement of seeing a stranger who's been let in, but also something akin to loss.
Okay.
You eventually arrive at Adelaide, what you know to be one of the central kind of spaces for entertainment and for revelry here. It's a large... canteen is maybe the wrong word, but it's a large place that has a lot of tables and a lot of little stalls where you can go and get refreshments of various kinds. You see that there's plenty of groups of people drinking here. You see groups of people playing cards or dice or chess. There is an elderly elven bard in the corner of the room playing music sort of softly that echoes throughout the cavernous room. You see that the roof here is much higher than in other chambers of this space, which lends itself to a kind of eerie but musically fascinating acoustic quality. You know that if Paz is going to come to meet you, he's likely going to come meet you here.
Adelaide will go over to the bar and signal to one of the bar keeps. 2 salt miners brew, please.
The barkeep is a dwarf. Short, stout, stocky, being absolutely covered in the fungal tendrils that substitute hair.
Sure thing. Can I get you anything else?
Mila looks to Adelaide. Not 3? What about your friend?
Paz doesn't drink. As far as I'm aware, I haven't seen him in several years now. Well, It's been a while.
She puts her hands up. All right.
The dwarven bartender returns with a kind of beer you know that is actually brewed here in-house. People who stay here for long periods of time are very proud of this brew because it's one of the few things that is genuinely, like, made here, and you can only really get it here.
Mila pays up.
You see that the dwarf looks over and goes, "Ooh, senior. All right."
Adelaide will take 2 shotgun cartridges out of his belt, put them on the table, and slide them over to the barkeep and say, "Can I also have a bottle of the silver whiskey, please?"
"Now see, that's more like it."
Takes these shotgun shells, leaving the senior temporarily on the bar, and hands you a sort of stoneware flask that you know is full of... It's called whiskey in the sense that you can call any liquor whiskey. The name is generous.
A very thick moonshine.
You sort of settle into the echoed chatter of this place until it is interrupted by a loud, booming voice from across the hall.
"Adelaide Viamer, you son of a bitch!"
Adelaide's face breaks out in a deep grin.
"Now where have I heard that motherfucking voice before?"
Mila, as you look up, you see a figure approaching at speed from across the hall, like at pace. Dressed quite similarly to Adelaide, but with colors that are a little bit more vibrant than what Adelaide typically wears. Very tall man, not Adelaide tall, but tall for clearly a human, with a similar broad hat and a respectable beard that is more salt than it is pepper at this point, and eyes that are much younger than the face they are set into, which at this point, even Adelaide, you notice, has many more lines and wrinkles than it did the last time you met.
Adelaide will stand up, and as he approaches, Adelaide will mime a holstered pistol, draw it quickly, and pretend to fire at Paz in a very familiar greeting game that they clearly used to play.
Paz does not reciprocate, but envelops you in a bear hug and says, "Motherfucker, if we were fighting, you would have been dead before you saw me."
Adelaide won't respond vocally in this embrace, but Razzie will crawl over from his shoulder onto Paz's and let out a caustic breath into his face.
Paz will respond almost automatically with the little scritch under the chin for Razzie, and looking over, sort of exiting the hug, will go, "And finally, you lonely bastard, you've let beauty into your life. A pleasure," and extends his hand out to Mila.
Mila is looking at this with, like, the most confused face Adelaide has ever seen on her for a series of reasons. Mila recognizes that accent anywhere.
Absolutely.
Does she know the surname that Adelaide said? Does she know the surname Karas?
Give me a history check with advantage because this is personal history.
I rolled 2 14s, so that's a total of 21.
You would know the last name Karas, I think, twofold. You would know the region it's from. You know that he's from Castelvecchio, so from the old capital, the faded glory of Lysandri geography. You also might find the name familiar. Yeah, on a 21, you might find the name familiar in terms of its relationship to recent Lysandry politics.
I mean, Mila does work in news.
Yeah, Karas would have been a name that came up around the dinner table when your father and Benny or any of the various uncles that were occasionally guests talked about how things were going in the old country. Because the name Karas, for a very long time, has been associated with resistance to the present government. 21. You would know that this is a family who are famous not for a single member, but for a multi-generational history of being a thorn in the principality's side.
Mila can respect that. She does almost a little curtsy, like picks up her skirts in a bit of a mocking gesture and says, "Ah, señor, if the captain had only told me we were meeting a countryman."
The expression on Paz's face brightens.
"I would not have thought this old bastard would take my advice as to the company he keeps, but it seems he's really classed up, huh?"
"It's not."
"Well, I pay him well for it."
"Uh-huh."
I'm Mila Bentezza. It's a pleasure."
"Bentezza. So you have been very well named. We are overjoyed to be able to welcome such a gem into our desolate corner of the world." And he takes your hand very respectfully, just by way of greeting.
"I must apologize for the welcome I'm sure you have received. But come, there is someone I'm very anxious for you to meet, but first," he gestures to a table, "we will sit and you will explain why you are here and why you are so rude as not to send word ahead of time."
"Will do."
Paz pulls out a seat, gesturing for Mila to sit before taking a seat himself, and you settle in to surprisingly comfortable chairs. Paz places his elbows on the table, sort of leaning in, not conspiratorially, but so that your conversation isn't overheard. "So, what brings you here so unexpected?"
Adelaide will take out of one of his pockets, as he answers Paz's question, a deck of cards that are handmade. They're the thickness of a general pack of cards, but they're unevenly cut, and they've got pretty beautifully hand-drawn depictions of plants and wildlife, and most notably for what someone from our world would recognize as face cards, various draconic beings. Each card is signed with a signature that, Mila, you probably would know, but only from official documents. This is a bit more quickly drawn than one of those would be. This is very clearly Adelaide's signature. He starts dealing them out in a game that would be very familiar to both him and Paz, but maybe, I don't know how well Mila knows essentially the equivalent of like rummy.
If it's played in bars and brothels, Mila probably knows it.
Mila knows this game.
We need to get to a proper medical facility. We've got a passenger on board that's not well, and I need to do it with a bit more cover than medical emergency would allow. So I'm looking for cargo. Legal cargo. And I was wondering if there's anything you could help me scrounge.
I mean, if you're here to do business, you're welcome to do business, but
I'm not sure I fully understand. Are you gonna put a patient in a crate?
No, I just need something for the paperwork.
We can arrange something for you here.
I'm happy to do it as a business transaction. It's more so you're on the ground and you know this place. It changes more rapidly than I can imagine. So.
Paz is gonna take a second for a pause. And as he looks at his cards, waves his hand in the air a little bit. Luck may be in your favor today. I don't presume to know the condition of your passenger. A recent arrival might be able to help.
All right.
It's maybe a long shot. I mean, if I could meet and have this person come in...
Not possible. For various reasons.
I mean, if your passenger were bleeding out, you wouldn't be spending time here. So clearly there's some variety of stable. But, I mean, what are we talking? Is this a gunshot wound? It's a...
Adelaide will shuffle the deck, draw four cards, and lay them out in front of Paz. The first one is a flower that is mostly found on the western reaches of the territories, where the veil between mapped civilization and unmapped wilds grows thin. It is a flower that is known to be populous. It is also known to be a weed. It grows, it expands. It's very much like a mint or a kudzu. This is, to those who know, very clear symbol for the Meridian military. The next card he puts down is a creature of fur and teeth with no viscera, but the inclination of a fresh hunt. This more generally signifies danger. Danger of being hunted. In this context, Paz would know this is the sign for I am being hunted, and with conjunction with these two, very likely there is a bounty on my head. The third card he puts down is another plant, though this is more of an herb. It is known for its curative properties, but it's not something that you take in immediate response to an injury. It is something that you distill into a tea or a poultice of some kind that you have to apply or drink or consume frequently over a longer period of time that helps with injury, helps with pain. The immediate danger of bleeding out is past, but there is still danger for, if medicine is not provided, if proper healthcare is not provided, they will probably not survive, or there will be severe lasting effects. And the last one is a reflective pool surrounded by trees that is, in this game of a language, doesn't signify anything to correspond with anything that's already been drawn. But between the two of them, it is of significance. Specifically, from Adelaide to Paz, that signifies I am way in over my head, and I am drowning, and I don't know what's going on, but I need help, and I need to get through this, and you will help me do this, because you've done it before, and I will owe you big time.
As you lay your cards down, Adelaide, Paz looks over them, The game that you are playing as a variation on Rummy is built on matching sets of cards.
Adelaide will hand the deck over.
Paz is going to give you a look and a nod and match two of your cards. He matches your military wildflower and he matches your healing herb.
Mila's looking between the two of them and trying to figure out whether Paz does remind her of her dad or not, or if it's just the accent.
You see Paz goes, I think we'll have to break off the game.
I haven't played yet.
In time, Signorina, in time.
I'll teach you.
We'll have plenty of time, okay. I hope. I understand that the situation is somewhat delicate, I assure you. You are well connected here.
All right.
As he gets up, he is going to pass by another exit of this room and sort of gesture that you should follow him. And he is going to tip the old elven bard in the corner. And I want both of you to give me a perception check to see if you notice something.
Yeah, I fucking notice it.
8.
23.
As he tips the older gentleman who was playing, he's stopped playing and he's now sketching in a notebook, a pretty big notebook. And something about it looks strange to you because it doesn't look like an artist's sketchbook. As you look at it, you see that the book he is sketching in, it's a little faded, but on the leather of the cover is a military insignia. And as you glance over, because he's not trying to hide what he's sketching, he's sketching the room, but you can see that he's actively drawing over what you can see is some kind of ledger.
Is fraud going on?
Adelaide will also tip another half senior.
You see the old elf looks up at you and goes, bless, thank you.
Keep up the good work.
He just kind of nods and continues sketching.
As they walk, Adelaide is going to conversationally turn to Paz and go, I hear there's been a restructure in the government here. Wartime measures. What's that about?
Unfortunately, things haven't been so smooth here. Some of us had run-ins with the law. There have been raids by the Yanawa up north. You know that this is the name of an elven indigenous group who live further north of here. And our scouts spotted troops in the mountains a month or so back. And we decided to declare, let's put it this way, we're bracing here. And it was decided that a little bit more decisive leadership might be necessary in case of anything going south.
Do I know them?
As you round the corner, Paz gives you a little smile and goes, no, but you will soon. You enter a room which you realize only once you've entered it is guarded. There are a pair of people standing on either side of the inside of the doorway, who are armed. Paz kinds of nods at them. You are in another little antechamber, but you can see that the room ahead is some kind of study. You see that it is packed with the kind of diffuse light that is perfect for reading, and Mila, you know library must smell. As you look into the room, just the bit you can see from the outside, you see a long table that is covered with papers and books that looks halfway between a study and a war room. Paz, again, smiles to you, Adelaide, and goes, let me go first, quickly. Nods at the guards, goes up to the door into the library, and goes,
Amore, there are some guests I think you should meet.
Mila whispers to Adelaide, is he married?
Not last I talked to him.
You hear a mumbled response from within the room, a voice that is gruff but very clearly feminine. says something in Elvish, actually, to Paz.
Send them in.
Paz turns back to you, nods, and gives you, like, the twin thumbs up of, like, we're good to go.
Adelaide raises a very questioning eyebrow of, well, we're gonna talk later about this.
Paz walks into the room, gesturing that you follow. As you enter here, you see that it's incredibly cramped. There are large bookshelves on every non-door wall of this room, and it only has one entrance and one exit. It is pretty well guarded. Again, there is this long table covered in papers. There's a lamp up above that is spreading light all over, and you see that there are two people in this room, two women, one older and one younger. The younger turns immediately to Paz, red bandana tied around short, cropped, very practical black hair. A woman maybe late 20s, early 30s, so younger than Paz by a little bit, but not by a tremendous amount. Gold earrings and copper-colored skin. Ears indicating some degree of elven heritage, which is to say, pointed out. Incredibly piercing eyes. The kind of attractive that immediately commands a degree of respect. Rust-colored coat tied with a sash around the middle that a pistol has been stuck into, as well as you can clearly see a handful of daggers. Big leather boots. Walks over, is going to reach up, give Paz a very tired kiss on the cheek, look over at you two and go, in Meridian, so, who are your friends?
With a incredibly surprised glare at Paz in a, you didn't even write to me about this. I wasn't invited to your wedding kind of look. Adelaide will do a head nod and a hat tip in deference and go, Captain Adelaide, Paz and I go way back.
You see her eyes widen a little bit as with a renewed amount of understanding for the situation. She extends out a hand for you to shake and goes, Captain, I've heard wonderful things.
Wonderful is a careful word, and he shakes her hand.
And she looks over, gesturing at Mila, also giving a hand to shake.
Mila puts her hand forward and says, I'm Mila Bentetsa. I'm traveling with the captain.
I see. So sorry. So incredibly rude of me. Otavia Arnaz, acting chief of Tres Barrancas, although, please, just Otavia is fine.
And,
Fiancé, Otavia says, pointing to Paz.
And how long's the happy couple been together? Cup still in hand from the whiskey, bottle in one hand. He sort of toasts and sips.
Paz gives you the look of, you're embarrassing me in front of the wizards. It's been about a year. It has been a while since we've spoken, hasn't it?
It has.
Clearly attempting to diffuse some of the immediate tension she senses has been created in the room, the other woman at the war room table, much older, clears her throat. A pretty damn tall and pretty built half-orc woman with short, undercut hair, standing with a stiffness that indicates that they are used to standing at attention in a sort of sandy, almost khaki-colored set of work clothes, essentially, with a bandana tied around the neck, looks up from her work and walks over, introducing herself, Mari Vandaroa. Pleasure to make your acquaintances.
It's a pleasure to make yours.
Adelaide, Mila, it's actually Mrs. Vandaroa I have brought you here to meet. Amore, they have a passenger who is, from what I understand, severely injured. And I think we could maybe do something in this case. You see that Otavia shares a look with Mari, who also kind of nods and says, I mean, of course, it depends on the severity of the wound, but I'm willing to take a look. Mila, as this person is talking, give me an arcana check.
Mila's so happy to see books again.
Yeah.
Does Mari have any insignia or anything that would betray governmental affiliation?
No.
Okay.
No, but you aren't wrong for asking.
Yeah. Based on the cards that Paz had matched, Adelaide has a decent idea of what's going on now that this situation is furthered.
Mila got a 24 arcana check.
You look over, Mila, at the book Mari was reading and see a very welcome sight. For the first time in a very long time, you see a rune list.
Oh my god.
I like to imagine that Mila says that out loud, very quietly.
Yeah, she definitely does.
You see that the area Mari was poring over is replete with mostly abjurative notes in the lingua arcana, indicating that this person is a mage.
Mila's brain starts spinning at the sight of objects to study. But she looks at Adelaide first, because he's the one who brought her here. And then at Paz and says, this is... The captain might have conveyed it, but it's a situation of a lot of discretion. I would prefer to know whose help I'm accepting. Though a mage is a welcome sight.
You look over at Mari, who clearly also has clocked your... We've established that Mila's general vibe is replete with little magical paraphernalia.
Yeah.
And despite Adelaide throwing a poncho over it, it can't hide the earrings,
the crystals around her horns. Yeah. There's still, you can still kind of hear the clattering of things under the poncho, and her spell book is hanging as well as a crossbody bag.
Mari goes, our kind of assistance can be hard to come by out here. And I assure you, I won't need any information that isn't strictly medically necessary in terms of healing this person. I mean, if it's possible to be brought there, or if the patient is mobile to bring them here.
I'm loath to have him move.
Understood.
Are you both a mage and a medical healer, ma'am? I see your rune list. I would actually love to have a look at one if you had a moment to spare, just because it's been too long and I'm less prepared than I would like to be.
Otavia
away
sort
from
of
library.
Looks over and goes, let's settle whatever the more pressing issue is, and then we can discuss access to our resources here. Mari chimes in and goes, absolutely. My magical specialty is protection and abjuration, and that's the capacity in which I'm employed by the settlement here. If the wounds are either relatively basic in nature or magical in occurrence, there's a good chance I can help.
Right.
She is going to make a check really quickly. Actually, two of them are. And Paz is going to give his fiancé the help action.
While that is happening, something that Mila does do is she would like to, if possible, behind her back, pull the somatic component for message and message Adelaide.
Are you stealthing?
Yeah.
Send your message and then we'll deal with the fallout of those checks.
Do you trust these people?
I trust Paz as far as he has saved my life multiple times. I trust that Mari is employed, which brings a certain loyalty, but it is not absolute. Otavia is unknown to me. I trust Paz, but...
Beggars can't be choosers.
Exactly. We'll just be careful.
You see that Otavia has missed this message. Mari has very clearly caught that a somatic component has been cast, is able to easily identify a message. Identifies that a message is being passed in secret, identifies that Adelaide is being shifty.
He's not.
Identifies that Adelaide is sizing people up, takes a second and says,
listen, if there's any worry or any piece of information you feel that you are lacking, let me accompany you, and on the way we can discuss anything you feel like might be missing. I'll leave Otavia to her important work here. I can spare a little bit of time.
All right.
Mila turns to Paz and says in Lysandrine, Tio, will you come?
I'll be happy to. I shouldn't distract anyway. You see, Otavia clearly understands just enough of your conversation to roll her eyes as she returns to work and says, I am sorry I can't help you more presently. Mari will assess the situation and we'll get you folks settled in, and I promise I'll have more time to... And she looks at you, Adelaide, go over everything this evening.
Anything you can give is fine.
Thank you, ma'am.
Appreciate it. My crew are currently stationed at the ship. Are they free to come and go as they please?
They're, of course, more than welcome. Our scouts will make sure that your vessel is safe while it's docked.
Adelaide will incline his head to Otavia in thanks. Put his arm around Paz's shoulders and walk him out of the room towards the airship, assuming that Mila and Mari will follow, and in a slightly hushed tone ask, do you trust Mari?
She's done very well by
us. With the information I've given you, do you trust her?
Come on, amigo. Do you really think an active duty person is hanging out in a place like this?
No.
During war?
No, I don't.
Listen, I understand, but you have to let that giant nut between your shoulders, and here he kind of pats you in the middle of your back. You have to let it unwind sometimes, old friend.
I suppose you're right. Desperate times come for desperate measures, you know what it is.
We do a lot of work here to make sure we are safe. Mari is part of that work.
You wouldn't happen to have an extra set of clothes that our ward would be able to change into before he comes into the settlement?
Of course. If the issue is he needs something, and he kind of looks you up and down, human-sized?
I'm actually not sure about that, but I haven't docked in a longer than I'd like to admit. So I wouldn't feel comfortable handing over my clothes. That was one of my desires in coming here, is to be able to have some washing and cleaning done.
If you had told me when we first met that you would be visiting my place to do your laundry, I would have laughed you out of the bar.
And yet, here we are.
Mila walking behind these two is gonna wanna make an inside check, cause the vibes are... She looks at this man that speaks enough like her father to remind her a little too much of him, and at Adelaide, and at Paz, and at Adelaide. And she's asking the question we're all asking.
Give me an insight check.
Yo, that's a 19.
On the die or raised to?
Total 19.
The vibes you get off Adelaide and Paz are not ex-lover, but very much the two people who have been to the outer stretches of the wilderness and come back different together. They are familiar not just with each other's personalities, but with each other's bodies, both in a very intimate sense, but also in the sense of if they had to right now fend off and against an attack, they would do it seamlessly, together. They wouldn't have to speak to know exactly what the other was planning on doing.
Mila looks on only with a vague regret at ever thinking about the captain's sex life. But more to the point, an earnest doubt and confusion in her mind. Because she knows Adelaide is a traveler. She knows he's a ship captain, that he doesn't stay put very often. And all she's seen is a very warm reception for him at this place. And she wonders, how many places can one possibly receive such a reception in? And in how many of them can one decide not to stay?
Adelaide will lead the small group back to the ship through the caustic mist, picking up their weapons and boots and equipment along the way. As they reach the airship Freedom's wings, Adelaide will give a big taxicab whistle that catches himself a little by surprise. It's not something he's done since Paz left, but it's so familiar to him. And he waits for the kobolds to line up as they usually do, or did, and bring down the gangplank for Adelaide and Paz.
As Paz boards the airship, he looks around and says to you, Adelaide,
oh, it's really seen better days, huh?
She's still chugging, though.
And as he fully steps onto the deck, he calls out,
at ease, gentlemen!
And the kobolds all kind of rush over to greet him. You see he sort of pats the heads of each of the kobolds in turn. And then as they kind of disperse, he turns to you, Adelaide, and says in a hushed tone,
again, a thousand pardons for having mentioned the harpoon to the impressionable one.
Adelaide will grimace, grit his teeth, and go, I think maybe one more apology would suffice.
He's still on about it?
It's been 2 years, and he hasn't shut up about it.
Mila pipes up and says, I'm gonna get him a magical harpoon.
A smile of almost paternal pride breaks across Paz's face.
I swear, I'm gonna kill both of you.
You can try.
All right, let's go see the patient. This room is one of two like it that has historically been used for premium paying passengers who wanted more than a bit of floor space and are willing to pay for it. These two identical rooms are each furnished with a bed, a small vanity bolted into the side of the ship with a mirror similarly bolted, and a wash basin that comes out from the wall tall enough to act as a bit of a sink, though it is a handfill and empties into a bucket below, so it can be exchanged.
Hey, Adelaide, roll an insight check.
14.
Omar looks very comfortable in this room as compared to on his bedroll on the floor.
You see Omar, who's sat up at this point, between grinning and grimacing at Adelaide, and goes,
Captain, I can't say I'm pleased to be in a room with a mirror, but apart from that, this is excellent accommodation.
And as more people enter the room, he goes,
from whom do I have the pleasure?
Soldier, this is Mari, and Paz. Paz is an old friend, and Mari will be your...
diagnostician?
Healthcare specialist. She's here to help.
Mari steps into the room and stands in a position you see as being attention. Omar straightens himself up. Mari goes, former senior war mage for the 5th. You. Omar chuckles a little bit and goes, well, I suppose at this point, former second class lieutenant for the 3rd. A pleasure.
Adelaide says, I don't think we need to be here for this, so I'm going to let the professionals do what they will. Razzie will be here if you need anything from us, but me and Paz have some catching up to do, if that's all right with you.
Mila raises her eyebrows.
Omar raises his eyebrows.
Adelaide ignores them both pointedly and walks out of the room.
Mila will start walking Mari through what she knows. Honestly, kind of disregarding Omar's reservedness and his stiffness about it.
Mm.
If he speaks up out of turn, she waves her hand to dismiss him, unbuttons the blouse so that Mari can see all of the tattoos and all of the wounds.
As you settle into diagnosing Omar, he leans over to you, Mila, and whispered, you could have said ahead of time we were going to have company. And you see he breaks into a little grin, knowing he's being a little bit of an asshole.
Mila just looks at him for a good 5 seconds, straight on.
You see the face of a man who so desperately needs a win.
Mila sighs deeply, as though this is a familiar situation to her, but tamps down her impulse to say something which she knows she'll regret.
I will say that the present situation mechanically is Mila granting Mari a help action on this medicine check. Mari has a pretty high medicine stat. She adds a +6 to medicine.
Knowing her bonus, Mila is going to use her portent role. What she does is she gets to a point where she is just kind of holding her hand under her chin and watching Mari examine Omar. And as Mari is moving her hands, she very quickly flicks her wrist. It's almost imperceptible. It must go her way.
And with that small intervention on the hand of fate, Mari receives a 21 on her medicine, which is decently high for the present task. It takes a little while of tracing out tattoos, clearing up areas of scarred skin to make things more legible. Mari is able to point out something that I think comes as a major revelation to Mila and to Omar, which is that these tattoos are functional and can be broken down by function. She points out areas that are clearly her specialty, abjurations, especially along the sort of center of his chest, which have to clearly do with binding. There are broadly two kinds of abjurative magic, the kind that abjures for the purpose of protection, and the kind that abjures with the purpose of sealing or making strong a connection. So that's a clear part of this magic. And I think on that 21, and something that Mila, you as a mage would know, a place where there's a lot of bleed into enchanting as well. in the sense of binding something to your will. There are areas that are clearly transmutative in character. So they deal with the school of transmutation, the magical school of turning one kind of body into another kind of body.
Right.
And here Mari says, it's quite remarkable that someone has very clearly designed a curse to mimic the symptoms of lycanthropy.
But is it a curse designed? I thought when I was, I don't really have that level of knowledge. I never completed the War Mage track, but when I was looking into it, the arcane seemed more to do with amplification than a curse on its own.
There are areas of this that are clearly intended to amplify, but those amplification on its own wouldn't accomplish much here.
Right.
The amplification is working off of a handful of basic spells. One of them is clearly some sort of binding. Another is this transformative element, this transmutative element, which is clearly designed to mimic the systems of, I guess, naturally occurring lycanthropy, as we understand it. And there's a third position here, and here she points to a section sort of turning Omar onto his stomach so that you can see what's on his back. This section here gives me the most pause. Miss Bentetza, would you accompany me outside of the room for a moment?
Yeah, of course. She waits for Mari to turn around and puts a hand on Omar's shoulder and tries to look at him reassuringly.
Give me an insight check.
Can Pinky help me?
Sure, Pinky can help you on this.
It's all because he told Mila to give Omar the flask.
That's an 18.
I think beyond the extreme discomfort you see on Omar's face, there is a renewed, genuine element of fear.
That was honestly why Mila tried to reassure him in the first place. She leaves the room.
As you and Mari retreat briefly from Omar's side to have your conversation, we'll pan up to the deck of the ship.
Adelaide brought Paz up to the second deck of the ship, to the dining hall area. That is less of a dining hall and more just a seating area, somewhere for people to get away from their sleeping quarters, to sit. It's almost like a portable taverna with tables arranged in small clusters, a couple of longer banquet tables, a couple of serving tables for when there is food available, and at one corner a couple of small card tables that Adelaide has managed to secure over his many years of captaining this airship. He'll sit down at one that the two of them have sat at many, many times before. Once again, pulls his cards out and starts dealing another game that is rote memory for the two of them. And after a few moments of comfortable silence, goes, so, you're, engaged. When did that happen?
Year and a half.
How'd you two meet?
He smiles. Fighting.
Of course you did. I'm happy for you.
She cares about this place more than even I do. How long can you stay in the sky? I'm serious. I
For the first time since I come here, I have both feet on the ground, and it's like nothing else.
You and I have talked about this many times before, so you know what my answer is going to be. The way you feel grounded when you have your feet firmly planted is how I feel up in those skies. You know I don't feel safe without a horizon to look to. I have too much that I want to learn. There's too much out there that needs to be. There are too many people for me to help. If I stopped, I think I'd lose myself. But I am happy for you. And it'll be sad not seeing you on the road. But it will be nice to know that you will always be where I left you.
And your road keeps taking you back here.
As often as I'm able.
And he says something in Lysandri that you actually know because he says it a lot.
Mazai, kejuvazo de tonaju.
What goes up must sometime come down.
Ali will respond in his own typical fashion. And let's hope that it's a safe coming down and not a crash and burn.
As the door shuts to Omar's room, Mari turns to you, Mila. There is something quite concerning with regards to the last piece of this matrix that's been placed on your fiancé?
Fiancé.
My congratulations.
It'll be a while before that gets through.
You see, she nods and says, that final portion is an enchantment. And it's a particularly powerful one. It is a combination of a pair of spells. Simple in casting, but problematic given the rest of the matrix. And she draws out the runic matrices for two spells that you actually recognize.
Okay.
Find familiar and dominate monster. And you think back to the fact that Omar's single remaining eye was pitch black when you found him. The same way yours go when you see through Pinky's eyes.
Mila turns to Mari with a certain kind of violence at this point. Had you seen any of this before? How do you...
Nothing like it. This is very clearly the work of someone with the kind of qualifications I used to carry. At least that's how it looks to me. But this is beyond the pale in terms of even what we would consider licit magical research. I want you to know, she takes your hand. I am very, very glad you found me before anything else happened. I am an abjurer. My whole deal is protection. And I will do everything that I can to make sure this last part doesn't have the outcome we can conjecture is a possibility.
Mila takes Mari's hand in both of hers and touches them to her forehead in a sign of respect and thanks from her own culture, something
she would see her mother do at temple sometimes, or her mother taught her to do to older women in her family. But when she picks her head back up, she says, "I'll have to leave the nursing to you then, ma'am. I need to go study."
You know him far better than I. Do you think he would take this news better as a husband or as a soldier?
He's neither of those things right now. And he won't listen if it comes from me. Or worse, he won't talk.
Understood. As the door opens and Mari re-enters the room, you see that Omar has sat up again, his hands folded in a gesture of supplication. And just as the door closes, Mila hears the repeated phrase escape his lips. Miserere me, Domina.
Miserere me, Domina.
Lady, have pity on me.
Miserere me, Domina.
She turns on her heels quick as she can and goes to find the captain. And pulls a bench at their table.
Adelaide puts down two cups, pours into each of them some of the liquor, the silver whiskey that he bought earlier, hands one of the glasses to Mila, cheerses her, downs it, puts it down on the table, pours himself another one, and lights himself a cigarette.
Mila looks over to him. If you do me the kindness of lending one of those, I don't have much of my own supply left, and we're gonna be here a
while. Adelaide will take out of his pocket a cigarette that he has already rolled for Mila and hands her it.
She smokes and drinks wordlessly and just watches, if she can, these two men play their card game.
Tales from World Asunder is Louisa Zanardi as Mila, Nick Sturman as Adelaide, and Simon Ivchevich as the world falling apart around them.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening.
This tale from World Asunder is brought to you by Gold Baron Broths and Soups. Made from original Meridian recipes, our spellbound formulae will last you as long as the westbound lines will run. Gold Baron Broths, for a rich taste of home wherever adventure may take you.